Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by CSpire. Power your home or business with CSpire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Well Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
Give the good folks, if you have any information, I heard the little snippet on our news about the situation at Delta State University. What do we know?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of details that I've been able to find that have been confirmed, but there was a body found on campus of Delta State University earlier this morning. Delta State has now canceled all classes and activities on campus while law enforcement are on the scene trying to figure out what happened. And Delta State has made available counselors if you are in need of counseling, if you feel less than normal because of the situation.
And that's all we know at this point, right?
Yeah.
Schools closed down.
There are rumors flying all over the place, but nothing confirmed.
Okay. Well, and we certainly don't want to add to the rumors. So as we get credible information that has been verified, we certainly will pass that on. We're all strapped in, ready to go. I got to tell you, I don't know about you, man. I needed that little break over the weekend. It was short-lived, of course, but it was just a lot last week. And you can't help but be affected by it. And it was time for some reflection and introspection. And I was able to do that over the weekend and spent some time with my family. My two adult children had dinner twice. Talked an awful lot about the events that transpired last week, what led up to it. And of course, you know, it's interesting. It's intriguing for me because they're in their 30s. And so it's a different generation, of course. And they're interacting with a different set of people than I interact with, as do you. You tend to, socialize more with people your age. I don't think that's anything new, of course. That doesn't mean that we don't socialize with folks outside of that age range. Of course we do. But not as quite as plugged in. And, of course, what's changed, and many in this country have pointed this out, is this instant ubiquitous access to these various communications tools that allow us to interact with anybody, anytime, anywhere in the world. And in doing so, I guess everybody has got a megaphone, right? And they can say whatever they want. Often, things they wouldn't say to you looking you in the eye. In person. That's what's changed. And I've witnessed some of that myself. And I'm just astonished, I guess, it's people. I guess I still can't get over the fact that it seems nobody can record a video without inappropriate profanity in it. And I know there are a lot of people saying you're just being an old fart. That's fine. I don't care. Even the old race lady. I had a clip I was going to play of her, Joy Reid. And she's out there. You can imagine the hell she's raising over this. Still attributing everything to, in her view, white supremacy. And you know, Charlie Kirk frequently would be confronted by those who said, well, you have white privilege. And his natural response is very similar to what you and I say on this program as well. Help me understand exactly what privilege do we have. And what the way he puts it is, what opportunities are availed to him as a white male that aren't to minorities in this country? I submit they have more opportunities, talking about minorities. Because, good grief, haven't we seen our institutional landscape twisted and manipulated and contorted and distorted every way possible to grant priority? And what's rich about this, as I pointed out before, is the race lady out there, Rhino, of course, denouncing all this and indicating that this is a function, a product of white supremacy. And this is coming from a black lady who attended Harvard and in her last year at MSNBC made $3 million a year. How could stuff like that come out of your mouth, given your circumstances? Her circumstances. How could she say that? Like, does she have some secret formula to get to where she got? Was she a DEI hire? Something to think about, right? I maintain this is wrong. Does this country have some stain in its past for being unfair and inequitable to certain classes of people, certain demographics? Absolutely. Sure. Are there still some people in our society who harbor feelings of racisms and all the other dang isms that they dream up? Yeah, sure. Flawed humans. But my gosh, is it structural? Is it systemic? I don't think so. And that's what they want you so desperately to believe. And just reflecting on what happened last week, all Charlie Kirk ever said was, well, tell me what I can do that you can't. And you know there's a couple of situations where black people would go to the mic and say, no, Charlie's right. Some nutcase, you remember that incident where they said, oh, yeah, because of their name, if they see that in a job application, they're just 50% less likely to get hired because of their name. That's horse hockey. I'm telling you, it is. There are employers in this country that when they have the opportunity to hire a minority, they fall all over themselves to do so because it checks all these boxes. It makes them feel virtuous. And look, as far as I'm concerned, they're fully within their right to do so. This is what's lost on the left. That all we believe is the ability of private individuals, private groups, to have private agreements without government interference. That's it, period. What's wrong with that? No, they want to force it.
It doesn't kowtow to the woke religion and their false god of government.
That is so true. And it's disgusting. And just looking back and thinking through all the various videos and podcasts that I've consumed from Charlie Kirk, that's all he ever said. That's all he ever said. And
there are people from the black community that are speaking up in defense of Charlie Kirk, like this individual.
Man, I'm so sick and tired of every uneducated black person calling Charlie Kirk racist. Like, everybody that's talking about him saying he racist is not even familiar with none of what he actually stood for real.
So true. So, my daughter said something on social media that I thought was totally appropriate. And she simply just said, you know, I sure would like to see us as a society, as a nation, come together. And she noted that she cried herself to sleep. I don't mind saying that. I don't think she was. She said it in public last week just thinking about, you know, what went on. I don't think it's surprising, is it, Rhino, that a lot of people experienced some degree of despair and depression. Certainly if you saw that video, you can't help but feel. You don't have a human bone cell in your body if you don't feel to some degree like that. And so she did, and it's amazing the response from some people that she would maintain are her friends. It's incredible. We're stepping aside for a break. It's Jeremy Nelson today at 11:05. And by the way, at 12:05, it's Super Talk Outdoors with Ricky Matthews. He's got Will Primos on. They're going to talk about how this Charlie Kirk assassination has affected the wildlife community. Stay with us.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Back with you on In the Element Well Studios, 601-879-4395. That's the C Spire text line. CC in Senatobia says, are you still trying to talk sense into nonsensical demons? Yeah, I guess I am, CC, and I don't think I'll stop. I mean, that's what I get paid to do here, is express my opinions, and Rhino as well, and that's what we're going to do. And my opinion is that we have seen lots of hate in this country on full display. It's disgusting, it's disturbing, it's disconcerting. Just how low regard and respect some people have for just human life. It's mind-boggling to me. Also on the C Spire text line, Gary in Carrollton says, I'm not working for a well-known company anymore because I don't fit the model. I, by choice, won't work for them. The model is young and preferably black for managers. Knowledge is way down the list. I won't be discriminated against. Yeah, and I hear you, Gary. And again, I fully support your and your employer's right to hire and terminate and promote and compensate as they see fit. I may disagree with their approach, with their model, with their policy. But I support their right as private organizations to establish it however they like without government interference. And someone on the C Spire text line, I'm not really sure where they got this, and I'm not even going to read it, Rhino, but I want to point this out. I support... This isn't the first time I've said that. I support at-will employment. That simply means an employer, in my view, has the right to hire and terminate and compensate, again, as they see fit, as the parties can agree. And in the case of termination, and we've seen a, man, just a raft of terminations. It's every other minute there's another story being shared. I don't ever remember seeing, you know what I'm saying, this sort of activity being promoted and reported so much as anything else. I mean, we all remember the cancel culture stuff. Every day it was another corporation doing something. Every day.
It was a construction worker getting fired for cracking his knuckles outside of the window of his truck. And his hand happened to make what normal, sane people would say is the OK symbol, where your thumb touches your index finger and the other three are extended.
Oh, my gosh.
But the loony left convinced themselves that that was a symbol of white power. So the construction worker cracking his knuckles outside his window had his place of business harassed until he was let go because they said he was a white supremacist.
Remember the race car driver with the little rope hanging that somebody thought was a noose? Turned out to be it was a garage pull. There's so many examples, right? And the truth and the facts didn't matter. The left was seizing upon it for political gain, period. And so all these companies, and not just private companies, but lots of public sector institutions, colleges and universities, bravo! They're terminating people, left and right. There's so many stories. We may share a few. You can't get to all of them.
And well, there's a particular piece of audio I'm going to play that, while it does contain language, I felt it was worth it to take the time and energy to censor it so that people can hear the evil that lives among us. So, in fact, I'll just play it right now. This is somebody who took to social media to express their views shortly after the assassination of Charlie Kirk.
We're going to push it. We're going to see how far we can push it. I was not kidding when I said, if you were going to get the job done, there were two better candidates. And furthermore, when that happens, and it will, it will. Not only will we be insensitive, that'll be the least of your worries. But it's gonna be the biggest celebration, the biggest, most beautiful celebration on planet Earth. On planet Earth right now. The entire planet is going to celebrate when he takes a turn. Finally.
No words. That's a disgusting, vile POS. That's what that is.
Evil lives among us. And
that's
the majority
incredible.
Of them vote Democrat.
It's just unbelievable.
If that hurts your feelings, good.
Gosh, dog, man. Incredible. Oh, boy. CC says, scary part about this. What do you think those liberals that just got fired going to do with all this brand new time on their hands, man?
They're setting up GoFundMes.
Yeah, I have seen that.
So if you'd like to just go to GoFundMe and search for fired and limit it to the last 7 days, you can report those because you're not allowed to raise money on GoFundMe if it's because of violence.
Unbelievable. Well, I got to continue this with my daughter because I think it's instructive. She just said, I can't put into words how depressed I've been this week. I've cried myself to sleep each night, stayed up. I'm disheartened by so much hatred I've seen. People I consider friends contributing to so much of that rhetoric. People I consider friends thinking the absolute worst of me, but won't say it to my face, just like we were saying earlier. Which only proves they don't really know me or my heart. She said, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. If you're apolitical, I love you. Or if you're apolitical, I love you and pray for you. So, It's just crazy, Rhino, but one of her former friends, I'm sorry to say, comes back and messages her, and what they said was rather incredible. Said, to so publicly mourn a man. Now, by the way, you heard me read what my daughter said. She said nothing about Charlie Kirk there. Zero. Now, perhaps you could infer it, right, because she did refer to last week, but that's irrelevant. So this person said, a former friend, to so publicly mourn a man who believes that I don't have enough brain power, you could tell this is a black person, a black female, to be taken seriously or that I am better off enslaved is absolutely wild. I am gutted to know so many people who I thought were my friends think that about me. I am fearful for my own safety, for my husband's safety, and my unborn child's safety, and not because of our political beliefs, but because of the color of our skin. So help me understand how her attributions to Charlie Kirk there align with reality.
They don't.
Right. But this
Those are the assertions of someone who has spent exactly 0 seconds listening to a single word that Charlie Kirk spoke.
Right.
They are simply going by the internet telephone game of, well, somebody I believe said it. Somebody that thinks like me said that, so it must be true. I can't possibly waste the time and energy to go look it up for myself.
She said, in the same way that I cannot be separated from my skin, we cannot separate from his death, that this man sowed a lot of discourse and hatred in our country. It's not hatred to not mourn someone's death, and I've yet to see anyone celebrating it. What? You've yet to see anyone celebrating it? See, do you see how wrong this individual is? First, she says Charlie Kirk thinks that black people ought to be enslaved. Never, ever did he even hint at such nonsense.
No, he was just willing to talk about uncomfortable truths that make people that are ignorant, naive, and downright stupid uncomfortable.
So true. We need more Charlie Kirks that are willing to go into the belly of the beast and speak the truth. And to suggest that I've not seen anyone celebrating it? Seriously?
It's typical for leftists to bury their head in the sand.
That's just
mind-boggling. That's how they make it through life.
So, my daughter, I'm not going to read what she wrote back, but basically she said, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. You've got that wrong. And by the way, if you no longer want to be friends, I'm 100%. I understand 100%, something to that effect, if you feel the need to end our friendship. Sad. Coming right back in the Element Well studio.
From the Seabrook.com.
You know, the other thing, of course, Rhino, this whole situation has brought out is just the litany of whataboutisms. And I guess, sure, that's the natural reaction. I find it both juvenile and lacking in creative thought. But we could play the whole show of statements made, incidents, and you got some sound we're going to share with the audience in a minute here, from people who have called for violence against the president, against Republicans, against conservatives. Yet, I don't know that I can recall of any, and I could be corrected, and if so, I'll denounce that as well. If there are people on the right who called for the assassination, the execution of Joe Biden or any Democrats or any people who promote liberal narratives, I'll denounce them as well. That's inappropriate. There's no place for that in this country or civil society. But I'm having a hard time finding such examples. I don't like leftist policies. I'll argue with them, and I'll provide my rationale for opposing those policies. But never, ever would I call for violence against those people, ever. I can't find any examples of such. But yet, you and I could make a show out of playing statements and clips from people. What about Madonna? I've thought about blowing up the White House.
Or Johnny Depp. When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
Yeah. I mean, there's numerous examples of that. So, earlier, though, I was talking to you guys about a person, a former, regrettably, friend of my daughter, who said that Charlie Kirk, essentially, I'm summarizing it, was just a white supremacist, a racist, and wanted black people to be enslaved. You got some sound about that.
Yeah, this is a young woman holding up an iPad that she's going to play a clip from Charlie Kirk, and she's in her bathroom, and then she's going to respond to it. And not that it matters, but because the left is so hung up on melanin content and lived experience, this is a young black woman. So here we go.
Black Americans are poorer today in 2024 than they were in the 1950s.
Yes. Why do you think that is?
Good question. So we have the Civil Rights Act. We have more benefits, more government programs. Something changed between the 1950s and 2024. So there's two answers to this question. Either America got more racist since 1950s okay. to 2024. So like that 70-year period, because black Americans are worse off today per capita.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You agree with that? Okay, good. Yeah. Than in the 1950s. Or there's another explanation. And I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, which is I think you would acknowledge that the disappearance of the black father has been the number one driver of black poverty in this country. Now, there are reasons for that we
can... Yeah. What do you think the reasons for that are?
Well, culture is one. Would you agree?
So, actually, let's go back to the foundations of that
culture. School to prison pipeline, all that stuff. But can we at least agree that black dads not being around is a bad thing?
Anyone's father not being around is a bad thing.
No, of course, but 75% of black youth are not raised with a father in the home. It's the highest of any group in the country.
Whether you like what he has to say or not, you don't get to just misquote him. And I understand because when I was on the left, I thought that I could trust my party. So I could just trust the headline or trust the 10-second clip because they wouldn't just character assassinate or physically assassinate anybody that disagrees with them politically, right? Actually, what I realized is that they call anybody a racist that has a difference of opinion in order to shut the conversation down, because why would you listen to what a racist has to say? So this will be a series. And if you are in support of this series, please like, comment, and subscribe so that I can keep going, because we don't get to just misquote people because we disagree with them.
So Charlie Kirk's spot on. And, you know, he discussed the root cause as the dissolution of the nuclear family and fatherless homes, something you and I have shared on this program, on this air, countless times. I mean, even you and I doing the research, digging into the statistics, the math, the numbers behind that viewpoint, which clearly indicate it's not 100%, but it's a much higher probability. And it is more prevalent in the black community. And I don't know what happened, because they were such a strong traditional family unit and it adhered to those values. What happened? What derailed that? Honestly, stronger than, in many respects, pre the Civil Rights Acts, than white Americans in that respect. What happened, man? What happened? All the government programs, all the money, all the laws, all the policies, what did it buy us? Nothing. Made it worse. Imagine that. Second order thinking. Government intervention, government attempting to solve a problem it should not even meddle in. Exacerbated the problem. I'm shocked. Unbelievable how things have changed. And Charlie Kirk is lambasted because he actually pointed out that a lot of this did start with the Civil Rights Act, right? And
prior to the Civil Rights Act, divorce rates and single-parent households were a much smaller percentage of the African-American population than any other population in the country.
Unbelievable. What happened? And by the way, I want to be clear. I'm not condemning them. I'm not trying to be critical here. I want to find a solution.
I think that's the problem, is because we are having an honest and open dialogue about something that makes leftists uncomfortable, they would call us racist.
Sadly, you are correct. And wasn't it LBJ caught off the record talking about how the Democrat Party would benefit from a political perspective?
Yeah, we can't repeat his words verbatim on the air because we would lose our license.
LBJ
was how little he thought of the African-American population that he was getting to vote for his party.
Was he a racist?
Oh, undoubtedly.
100%. Revered, however, by the left.
He was also a sex pest.
I didn't know that, but
oh, yeah,
I don't doubt
it. He loved pulling out his manhood in front of people.
Oh, my gosh.
But the only likable thing about LBJ was he was a prankster that had a car that would float on water and turned into a boat. And he would take people out on his property and act like the brakes were going out and run them off into the lake and then laugh as they thought they were going to drown.
Oh, jeez. Well, he would be revered by them on the left as a transformational figure, as a stalwart of democracy. Unbelievable. What's really disturbing are the large number of educators being terminated for their incredibly inhumane, heinous reaction. And they're being terminated left and right. And what's disturbing about it is these are the people we're entrusting our children to. And that's where it starts. And every bit of this, I believe, is rooted in what's happening in our educational institutions. And many of these people, and I want to say I'm generalizing here, not all, many are just losers. They're losers in life. They're mad about their predicament and their situation.
That's why they flock to the left.
And this
intersectionality gives power to losers, simply for being losers.
But it's, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, it's misguided power. It's false power. Power over children? That's what you derive some sort of perverse pleasure from? Oh, aren't you something? You got third graders to see your point of view. Unbelievable. Is that not sick? I mean, I could come up with other words to describe it, but at a minimum, you're a sick, deranged, delusional individual. Maybe you're a psychopath, honestly. A sycophant. Unbelievable. So, I'm not sure we would have seen this reaction, Rhino, within a year or 2 years after the George Floyd situation where the cancel culture wave swept the country. I'm not sure we would have seen terminations like this. Some are just reprimands, pay without leave, which are, you know, a slap on the wrist at best. But even medical professionals, shocking to me, I got one from a judge in Ohio. How could you
believe
it?
There are elected Democrats that were celebrating this. Elected Democrat officials.
Unbelievable. But we're to expect objective application of the law, right, from these same people who are demonstrating their political viewpoints to public. Coming right back.
Go ahead.
Welcome back, everyone. It's middays. Don't forget Super Talk Mississippi Outdoors at 12:05. Today we'll feature, of course, the host, Ricky Matthews. He'll have a conversation with notable outdoorsman, entrepreneur, business person here in the state of Mississippi, Will Primos, about the reaction to the execution in broad daylight of Charlie Kirk, the reaction from the wildlife community. That's a community he, of course, is very much plugged into, so that should be a good report for you there. Yeah, there are multiple reports of professors even at American universities that are being terminated for their completely inappropriate, insensitive, harmful, inhumane, disrespectful, a litany of adjectives to describe the behavior. They're being separated from their employment. And the one thing that I almost feel bad about that I note is that they all have a look. You say, yep, that would be a person that would say that. What is it about that?
It's the uniform of nonconformity.
It's gross. I'm just going to say it. It really is. All right, so play some sound that's quite shocking that Rhino's about to play here.
Yeah, this is a child discussing current events with their daughters. This mom obviously has done a poor job of parenting these two young girls. Just give it a listen.
I have the best news ever.
What? Donald Trump died?
Second best news.
The vice president died?
Okay, third best news.
Elon Musk died?
Okay, no. Nobody died. My best friend's getting married.
Which one is it?
Taylor Swift! Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce got engaged!
If that's not sick, I don't know what is. So these are people raising children, promoting that sort of crap.
You can hear the derangement in her voice, and you can tell the derangement in her words.
That's totally
sick. And the derangement will pass on to her progeny because she's evil.
And or
crazy.
That is a person that does not... is not worthy of the gift of children from God, does not deserve to be a mother, in my view, unfit to be one. When you've got young children sounding somewhat elated at the prospect of anybody being dead, much less our president, our vice president, another just private individual.
How many times have those poor kids had to listen to their mom rant and rave and wish for death on another human being? To the point that that's their first guess when she's got good news.
That's really sick. That's just mind-boggling. That's extremely disturbing. Man, oh man. Liberals want the government to be daddy of all of us, says Jerry in Pontotoc. Yeah, CC in Sanatobia says, what you're talking about, they consider hate speech. Anything they do not hearing is hate speech. I don't even think there is such a thing as hate speech. Because there's no consensus of what that consists of. If something, it's one of those deals, if something's hate speech, then everything's hate speech. Because you just shared with us an incident where somebody cracking their knuckles is considered a sound of hate, right? I mean, that's how deranged and delusional.
A rodeo clown got fired for wearing an Obama mask. A clown fired for doing something funny.
On the ceasefire text line, are you suggesting that government assistance contributed to the fatherless homes in the black community? How dare you? Yeah, I am. And it's of course, it's, I think Rhino would agree, it's not unique and not limited to just black communities. It just seems to be exacerbated and only because of the statistics. We're just looking at statistics. And I don't believe numbers lie when properly accounted for and veracity has been determined. And in this case, there are numerous reports which in organizations which have collected and published this information. We're not making this stuff up here by any stretch. And I want to be clear. I want to figure out what we can do to help turn this thing around. I don't want to just dwell on and point fingers and cast aspersions on the situation. It's harming everyone in society, including them. But they don't admit that, do they? The Democrats won't admit that. The very people that they claim they are the advocates, the champions for, also support policies that hurt them at the end of the day. That's the irony. Fox News, Super Talk News, and then Jeremy Nelson.
Your home of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Welcome to the show that challenges you to think deeply.
To think deeply.
And look beyond political posturing. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Middays from the Element Well Studio. It's a Monday. It's a short show. Super Talk Outdoors with Ricky Matthews comes your way at 12:05. His guest today is Will Primos. He, of course, is an outdoorsman well known for his many inventions right here in the state of Mississippi, goods that he markets to the outdoors community, and he'll be talking about the response, the reaction over the assassination of Charlie Kirk from within those who enjoy the various wildlife sports that we are able to experience in this country, and in particular the state of Mississippi. Right now it's Jeremy Nelson, the president of Element Wealth. Jeremy, good to see you. Thought we'd have you in to talk about the markets and finance and economics and maybe shift gears a little bit.
Yeah, a lot going on. I haven't been on the show, but I just want to send my thoughts and prayers out to Charlie's family and anybody who's been, you know, a victim of senseless gun violence. It's just it's a tragedy that we're at this point. We're so polarized. We got to kind of figure this thing out.
Exactly. And something that, of course, Charlie was a huge advocate for and espouse the virtues of is free market enterprise. And that's the business that certainly you're engaged in and something we wholeheartedly support here on this network and on this program.
Yeah, I think, look, ultimately, you know, I do find it fascinating, right, when we look back at, you know, not just the last few years, but the last 16-plus years, right, of everything is just so reliant on what's the Fed going to do, right? And we've always paid a lot of attention to the Fed, but you know, there's so much built on what's going to happen with a quarter point interest rate and what's the Fed going to do with their balance sheet, right? And we got to get back to just letting free markets work and letting entrepreneurs create jobs. And you know, I think that I find it very fascinating how we've gotten to this point of just everything hinges on what the Fed does, right? And there just becomes a certain point where the Fed can't do it all. And, you know, the question is kind of when do we get to that point? But, you know, you kind of see, you know, we get a bad jobs number. And, well, that means the Fed's going to cut, so the market goes up. Well, the bad jobs number is still a bad jobs number, right? And all of a sudden, the market keeps getting more and more and more and more expensive, right? Well, there becomes a point in time where those valuations start coming down. And I think the thing that concerns me, and this is not like an imminent thing, but I think the thing that concerns me a little bit longer term or more intermediate is when valuations come down, they come down quick.
Yeah.
Right. They always, you know, we always talk about how the stock market takes the escalator up and the elevator down.
Well put. And, of course, that's why it's not a place for those with a queasy stomach, right? But the opportunities are incredible. It's still the greatest wealth-generating machine ever invented in history.
Absolutely. I think that there's a great misunderstanding about the stock market. You know, people talk about how it's rigged. All right, look. If you want to sit there and day trade against hedge funds, good luck, right? You're not going to win. You're just not going to win that game, right? They control too much money. But if you just want to invest, not trade, invest, right,
yeah,
for the long term, stocks are a great wealth creator, right? That's why we talk to young people all the time and say, look, invest in your 401k, dollar cost average, right? Because what people have to understand about the stock market is this, right? Man is the inventor species, okay? Like, no other creature, animal on this earth can do what we can do,
mm-hmm,
right? And so over time, we invent things. What happens when we invent things? We become more productive, right? And what happens when we're more productive and we can do more in an hour? Well, we get paid more.
Yeah.
If we get paid more, what do? We consume more. If we consume more, what happens, right? The economy grows. If people are consuming more and the economy is growing, over time, are corporations going to make more or less money? They're going to make more money. Well, if corporations make more money, are they worth more or less? Well, they're worth more.
Well, right? You're getting into what Rhino likes to call second-order thinking there. But, you know, the great Larry Kudlow likes to say profits are the mother's milk of stocks.
Yeah.
And what creates wealth and profit is productivity.
That's it. The backbone, right? Ray Dalio is a big talker about this, how the backbone of economic growth is labor productivity, right? That is it. And, I mean, I look back at what I can do today versus 21 years ago when I started, how we do things. It's not even close.
It's mind-boggling.
So much more.
I agree. And that's something that I think about when I come into your office and you got these screens all over the place and all of those systems are equipped and you have available to you just this plethora of incredibly powerful tools,
mm-hmm,
that you use that augment you,
yeah,
to manage folks' money like myself.
Yeah.
And it takes me back when I first started in the IT industry in the mid-'80s. We had a local brokerage house at the time, is what it was. I'm not even going to say who it was. But when you go in their office, well, they have Bloomberg terminals,
mm-hmm,
right? That was it.
Yep.
So the only tool they had that the rest of us didn't back then,
yep,
was instant ability to view market activity, to trade. And that required them communicating with their people up on the floor, right?
Yeah.
Handing slips up,
yeah,
to execute the trades. Think about how we do that now in the palm of our hand.
You push a button, you're on your phone, boom,
yeah,
done.
It's and not paying fees for it,
yeah,
anymore. But so guess what that created? Wealth. And in creating that wealth, I'm going through a little second order thinking here, it gave rise to firms such as yours.
Oh, absolutely.
We got wealthy through all that. At Revolution, and so now you guys are wealth managers. You're not stockbrokers.
No,
you're wealth managers.
And that's it, right? When you think about, right, the technology and the ability for small entrepreneurs like me 8 years ago when I started Element, right, where back 20 years ago, couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Right? But it was, you know, we were able to start from de novo, right? And, you know, here we are 8 years later, and it's incredible what has happened, right? And that's because of the technology. And, you know, the great thing about that is that, you know, we've created 12 jobs now in Mississippi because we've been able to, you know, build this firm.
So in the point there, I think the main takeaway there, Jeremy, and I think you would agree, there's nothing that the big guys have access to that you don't have these days, right?
No.
And there was a time when that you were precluded from that. You couldn't have built a business
exactly
like that.
Exactly. And, you know, we have access to everything and anything that the big guys are going to have access to. But we're able to be small, nimble, You know, we don't have seven layers of management coming down from, you know, New York and all the way down, right? And that's the beauty of the registered investment advisory model. That's why you're seeing more and more of them coming up. And it's a lot of people like me who are saying, hey, look, we don't want to have to answer to seven layers of management, deal with all the bureaucracy. We just want to work with our clients, right? Well, we've got that ability now.
Yeah.
And that's because of, you know, technology and productivity gains that we've had within the industry.
It truly has, and it's not just your industry, as you know, it truly has leveled the playing field such that even smaller so-called mom-and-pop shops, but small and mid-sized businesses, they have access to the same tool set that the Fortune companies do.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely have access to that. And there was a time when if you wanted to automate just the basic functions of a company, you had to be a big company that it could afford millions of dollars of technology. It precluded the average person. Now, all of that's available as an affordable commodity.
Absolutely.
And they're all more productive, more profitable as a result of it. I know it gets a little philosophical, but I can't overemphasize this because this is available to everybody. Everybody. And I shared last week, Jeremy, get your take on this. I can't remember who it was from the financial community that said, you know, I predict that within the next 5 years, we'll see the first $1 billion annual revenue one employee company. Plausible, is it not?
I could see that, right? Especially when you start thinking about how we've shifted more towards services and you don't need a bunch of capital to build a plant and do things.
Right.
Yeah,
you don't have to have the physical footprint that you once did. Using all these tools available to you and your noggin, your God-given thought and brain power, right? That's exactly where we are. That just excites me when I think about, man, that is fantastic, $1 billion single-person company. Imagine what's going to emanate and flow down from that. We got Jeremy Nelson, the president of Element Wealth, in the Element Wealth studio. When we come back, kind of dig into the market landscape and the economic landscape in our country. Stay with us. We're back with you in the Element Wealth studio. So we got Jeremy Nelson, the president of Element Wealth. Larry Ellison, what a company he has created. I've always thought highly. He's a bit eccentric and a bit out there, can be sometimes abrasive. But you can't deny that the guy was a great CEO.
Oh, incredible.
And invented a fantastic company, that being Oracle. And I'm bringing him up because, as you know, Oracle, not only did they have a good quarter, but their guidance was unbelievable. And when they announced all these deals they had inked to deliver cloud services, subscription contracts, which are like gold, as you know, to the investment community, because it's predictable.
Yep.
We don't have to worry about, man, I hope they sold enough this quarter. You know, ooh, okay, we made it. No, when you got these long-term contracts, and many of these contracts, as you know, even have easy outs for just terminating for convenience. They rarely do at the end of the day. If you're doing your job. And so his wealth ascends to a point that it makes him the richest guy in the country because of Oracle's. Now, he's no longer the CEO of the company. He's chairman of the board, I think.
Yep.
But and this is just, don't you think, just further evidence that this whole AI revolution does have legs, it is for real, and profits are being produced?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So, yes, in the sense that there are players like Oracle, right, and so the cloud providers, right, the people that have the actual infrastructure, yes, there's money to be made there. And again, when we saw, you know, their numbers weren't that great, but it was the outlook that just sent the stock through the roof.
Yep.
So those players have locked in profits built in. The question mark becomes the actual people that are using those services, like a lot of the AI companies, they're not making money yet.
Yeah.
Right. So they haven't hit that scale where they're generating profits at this point in time. One of the things I've talked about is I'm actually a massive, massive believer that AI is like the next thing that is going to drive labor productivity, and it's going to be a good thing, just like the computer was back in the 90s for us. But I think that it becomes commoditized so fast, right? I mean, think about if you just get on your phone today, how many options you have for like generative AI searches already.
That's true.
Well, nobody's making money at that at this point in time.
That's right.
So I think
power companies.
Yeah. So yeah, again, like
the infrastructure providers.
The power companies and the infrastructure providers are a really interesting place that have diverse businesses with other things going on. I think they're going to be massive benefactors. The question becomes, you know, can we get these AI companies to a point where they're actually making money? Because, you know, most of them are still in the private space, but you look at the valuations on them and you go,
ooh, well, sure,
that's a little aggressive.
It's novel. Yeah, no doubt about that.
But yeah, this is a big thing. The AI thing does have legs. Like it is. I don't think you can shy away from it. I think that if you're a non-believer in this, that it's just going to go away, you are going to miss out, right? It is here. It's not going anywhere. But, you know, just because a company says AI, right, doesn't mean it's going to be profitable. So as investors, right, if you're investing in individual securities, you got to be kind of careful. Now, again, a lot of these companies are still private, so you don't even have access to them yet. But, you know, overall, this is not going anywhere, and it's going to be a major productivity driver.
You probably saw that NVIDIA just announced this morning they signed a $6.3 billion deal for an order with CoreWeave, which is a data center.
Yep. That they
operator.
Invested in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So yep. Incredible. But you're right. I think there will be a lot of false starts, as there always is with novel technology. There will be implementations where companies say, yeah, we didn't really get our value out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that probably won't stop their investment or their pursuit of it.
I don't think that it's going to be that expensive to implement a lot of this stuff because there's so much competition. I mean, go back 3 years ago and we had just heard about ChatGPT, right? It was like, oh, generative AI. And,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, Grok, Gemini, right? I mean, there's all kinds of them that are out there that we have access to now. So you're just going to see more and more of this, and there's going to be a fierce, fierce competition there, right? And the free markets will ultimately sort it all out.
Yeah. And I think that while most of us think about AI being the generative variety, which certainly creates lots of value, I think the greater opportunity is in the next wave of super intelligence, right?
The next wave is the big thing. Now, I'm not a tech expert, so I don't know how long it takes us to get there. I think there's some kinks that have to get ironed out here first. But yeah, look, the speed that this is going, right? I mean, you just think about old Moore's Law, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, technology doubles every 18 months and the price gets cut in half.
Yeah.
That's just going to continue to happen here. And there's just so much capital going into this in the private markets right now and the big tech companies investing in it that they're going to continue to innovate and create new things.
That's right. And I think the difference is, though, that the investment's coming from not just startups that are hoping to figure out a way to eventually turn into a profitable entity, but massive investments from very profitable companies.
I mean, you're seeing the investments from the Microsofts, right, with OpenAI. You're seeing, you know, Google's in it, Amazon's in it, NVIDIA, right? They were part of the CoreWeave startup there. So, yeah, like you're going to see more and more of this over time. And, you know, I think that's why you also need to be a long-term investor in stocks. Yes, are stocks broadly somewhat expensive today? Absolutely. But, you know, when you own these, you know, these large corporations through your mutual funds, ETFs, or diversified equity portfolios, you're getting exposure there. And there's going to be some lumps that come, right? There's going to be some misses at some point in time, right? The expectations are very high. But as a long-term investor, right, again, stocks, there are 10-year periods of times where stocks are negative. So if you're in retirement, you got to be careful. You know, you don't want to load the boat, take too much risk. But if you're young or still in that accumulation phase, right, just hold your nose and dollar cost average.
But you talk about this on your show a lot. You talk about it in your promo on our show, which is you guys take a 360-degree view and really look at all the aspects of it and really gear your message, it feels like, Jeremy, more for people like me, retired people.
Yeah, I mean, look, so if we think about it, right, so we all go through three phases of savings and using our investments, right? So there's the accumulation phase, right? Dollar cost average, hold your nose, right? Then you get to the transition phase. This is where we're kind of starting to think about risk a little bit more, and we got to start preparing for how we're going to generate paychecks, right? And then we get to retirement, and now we're in the distribution phase. And so in each of those phases, you kind of need to think a little bit differently because, you know, there are cases like, you know, when the dot-com bubble burst where, you know, if you were just 100% in the S&P 500, and you were taking 4% out and increasing it with inflation, you would have ran out of money.
Yeah.
So you still got to worry about managing risk as you get older, but it's still important that you have, you know, stocks for the long run because just because you're 65 doesn't mean you're done. You got another 20 to 30 years of life in front of you, right? Your portfolio's got to last.
So
you need
so.
Those growth assets.
No, that's exactly right. And so that's what's changed is that we sort of end our work career and move on to retirement, and we're living longer, and it just necessitates more careful planning of your financial future.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, you start talking about balance sheet management, right? Like where – okay, when things are good, it's easy. When we go through a downturn, where are you going to draw money from so that your long-duration assets, right, your stocks and things, have time to recover and get back on footing?
Let's talk about our fiscal house. I was just sharing with you on the break that it just seems like, once again, we're set to generate a deficit north of $2 trillion. That's unthinkable, in my view. And that's based on the latest Treasury report just released last week, which did provide the data for the month of August and, of course, year to date. So the Fed's looking at that. They're looking at a weakening job market, but they really hadn't tamed inflation the way they thought. That puts them in a conundrum. We got a break. Yeah. You can respond to that on the other side. Jeremy
Absolutely.
Nelson, president of Element Wealth, is in the Element Wealth studio.
From the Seabrook, Mississippi.
Legally valid estate plan online. Fast, affordable, and customized for my state. Go to trustandwell.com and use code radio for 20% off. Don't leave a mess behind. Leave a plan. Trust and Will is an online estate planning service. See website for details.
Trust and Will.
Bring it on.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk, Mississippi.
We're back with you in the Element Wealth studio. So the president, we got Jeremy Nelson, president of Element Wealth. The president this morning on his Truth Social, he's proposing to end the requirement of public companies to report their financial performance their earnings quarterly. He wants to change that to be semi-annual, twice a year, as opposed to quarterly. What do you think about that?
I'm not a fan of that.
Okay.
Right. I think that it's important for investors to get, you know, timely information about what is going on inside of the companies that they own, right? I think that gives, you know, more time to, you know, kind of cover things up. It's just, to me, transparency as an investor is really important, right?
Okay.
And all of these companies are well equipped to do this. And if you're not equipped, stay private, right? I mean, what we're seeing today is that because of private equity, a lot of companies just stay private a lot longer. There's other avenues to capital. But if you go into the public markets and, you know, Nana and Granddad are owning your stocks, you know, I think that they deserve a timely quarterly.
Okay. So to be clear, the president wants to change the federal policy, the SEC policy. It doesn't prevent a company from reporting. They can report daily if they want to, right? Yeah. So that might kind of become a market competitive scenario if they were only doing it twice a year. Maybe they, hey, look at us, we're willing to put all of our financial data out there.
I think that the where I see, you know, challenges, and you see some companies that give guidance, right, and some companies that don't give guidance, right? But reporting the accounting is just reporting the accounting.
Yeah. I mean, they literally could push buttons and spend a couple of hours writing an MD&A and be done with their requirements.
I mean, they're tracking this all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're well prepared
for it. Of course. Yeah. It's not like the old days where it was a huge exercise to compile a quarterly report.
I think you would see a lot of companies going to the semi-annual just to not deal with it, though.
I think so. I think you're right. But the president's asking for that. I found that interesting. So we're approaching another government shutdown. If the Congress doesn't act, that would go into effect at the end of the month. We're a couple of weeks away. And the president's actually, he's encouraging the Congress to pass another, what's called a continuing resolution, which just sets spending at the current level for whatever term is included in the continuing resolution. In this case, he's asking for them to do it through January 31st, as opposed to debating spending on the discretionary side on the floors of the House and Senate and crafting these 12 separate appropriations bills. I'm a little surprised the president is looking for that. I think he's worried about a shutdown, and the Democrats have said, we will shut down, and we've got a way figured out to blame this on Republicans because we want to extend the subsidies, the enhanced subsidies in the Affordable Care Act exchanges. What do markets think about this whole situation?
Markets have become immune to the circus of the government shutdown, right?
It is a circus.
So you know, go back to 2011. It was a big freakout, right?
Yeah.
It was a big, big issue. But I think that markets have become desensitized to it because we know they're not going to do it, right? They're eventually going to get somewhere. Now, if we actually got to a prolonged government shutdown, that would be, you know, somewhat problematic.
Yeah, I think
so. But I think that the market looks at it and just discounts it right now and says there's no way they're not going to do it. Nobody wants to take the blame for the government shutting down, so they're going to do something to avoid it.
At what point, Jeremy, you and I were talking offline about this $37 trillion of debt. My personal opinion is we'll never pay a dime on it. I don't see how we ever get in a situation. Certainly, if the first hoop we got to go through to pay down on the debt is to balance the budget, I don't see that happening anytime soon. We could take some funding or some revenue, I should say, from certain sources and just earmark it to pay down debt. But that just increases deficits on the other side, and we end up borrowing.
You end up in the same place,
yeah.
Right? So the reality is this. People used to always ask me, this was post-financial crisis, you know, when this was going to matter. I said, well, it won't matter till it matters, right? And I didn't mean that to be just totally tongue-in-cheek. My point was, until the market cares about it, it's not going to matter, right? And I'm to a point now where I look at the runway of another, you know, 20 to 24 trillion over the next decade that we're going to rack up on top of the 37 that we already have. And you start to look at the debt service levels that we have, where we're kind of where the rubber is about to meet the road here.
Okay.
This is a point in time where there's almost no turning back on these deficits, right? There's, you know, whenever we put these tax bills out, we say, well, they're going to be budget neutral in 10 years.
Right.
Well, that means that we just accumulated another $20 to $24 trillion of debt, right? And the debt service as a percentage of GDP is going up and up and up, and it's already surpassed defense spending. This is the issue. Hence why the president's pushing for the Fed to cut rates. But the Fed cutting rates doesn't solve the issue of long-term interest
rates.
So maybe you can refinance your debt on the short term at lower rates, but you're still issuing more and more and more and more. And that's the problem. And we are not Japan. I do not think that we can completely internalize our debt. Again, we're the leaders of the global economy. We're not going to see Americans willing to just take interest rate caps and buy U.S. debt at 1% for 10 years and just be happy with it, right? We can't do what Japan did. So we're getting to a point where this is going to be a major issue within – maybe not tomorrow, but I think within the next few years, this is going to be a topic that's going to become a massive issue.
I get worried about the bond market wilting on us and the ratings agencies and so forth and causing problems for us just auctioning off the sale of our treasuries.
Yeah. And look, and the Fed's in a real tough spot here, right, because – labor markets are weakening dramatically.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, job growth is down to next to nothing. At the same time, you know, most of the time if job growth is really weakening, inflation should really be coming down.
Yep.
But it's not, right? It's staying steady around this, you know, 2.9% rate. So they're above their mandate of 2%.
Okay.
Right? Or their target.
Yep.
So, and then at the same time, on the other side, you're starting to get a weakening labor market. And if AI takes off, you're going to get more and more weakness in the labor market, right? And so now they're in a really, really tough spot. And that's why I do believe that getting this spending under control, balancing or moving towards a more balanced budget, they're not going to balance the budget overnight. You can't just take $2 trillion and figure it out. But you got to get on a path here to where this is sustainable. Because we have to send a message to the rest of the world like, no, hey, we've got our house in order here.
It's a predicament for the Fed, as you know, because their job is what they call price stability. That's one of their mandates. That basically means keep inflation in check. And then maximum employment, that's generally defined as what, 4% unemployment, yep, so forth. But even that data can't be relied upon. We've known that for a long time, and now that's coming to light.
Yeah, I mean, we've known issues with the surveys, right? We've been having these, you know, relatively large revisions for a long time. Now they exacerbated recently, but you know, the reality is that with the surveys that we're getting, you know, it's like a fraction of what they used to get.
Yeah.
So it's taking so long to get the survey data in to give us accurate numbers on the jobs. And now we're starting to see those cracks in the labor market. At the same time, inflation isn't quite going away. Well, let's throw one more on top of it. What if the federal – or what if the Supreme Court reverses the tariffs? Right, because that's going to be pushed up to the Supreme Court, right? So all of a sudden, that tax revenue that was created is going to have to go back to the companies that paid it. Well, now the fiscal house is even more of a mess, because part of the administration's plan to help pay for some of this stuff was to create a new tax revenue or increase the tax revenues from tariffs.
Yep.
Well, if that gets reversed, which I'm not betting on anything with regard to what the Supreme Court would do there, whether or not it's, you know, unconstitutional. But that gets to a point where you're like, huh, this fiscal house needs to get in order. I Ben Bernanke, I had a call with him years and years ago, and he said monetary policy can only bail out bad fiscal policy for so long.
Right. They just don't have the tools at their disposal. And those don't really fix the the fiscal woes of overspending, of revenues not covering expenses, yeah. fundamentally. Jeremy Nelson, president of Element Wealth, has been our guest in the Element Wealth studio. Appreciate you coming on,
right.
as always.
Thanks,
enjoyed the discussion. We're coming right back with a final segment of Middays. Stay with us.
Poly Up of Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. Paula Meridian says, the amount of hate coming from the left on X is amazing. I've never seen videos of people calling for the next people to be Charlie's wife and his kids. How evil can you be? Yeah, I mean, the one you played for us, which sounded like a possessed individual. I think we had a couple of people on our text line that suggested the same. It is incredible. And I guess for me, closer to home, just witnessing exchanges between my daughter and people whom she thought were her friends. One even accused her of not having Christian beliefs. And she said something about praying for the country and unity and civility in our country. And somebody like accused her. You know, want to know how many times do you go to church? Like, well, I personally attend Mass every Sunday. That's my choice, and I receive great value in doing so and feel obligated. But you know what? The way you comport yourself and behave is really what I think God looks for, and when you're a good person, a loving person, and you respect human life, God knows that, in my view.
I have a very simple response. I refuse to be lectured on my faith by pure evil.
And that's what it feels like is going on here. And so if this person thinks, oh, yeah, well, you're superior because you happen to go to church, you sit in a building, that doesn't mean anything. It's what's in your heart and mind and how you what you say, and more importantly, what you do. I don't want to get into the trap that the left has already provided, which is, oh, yeah, your speech is, it's hate, it's evil, it's violence. They literally do believe speech is violence. Yet, actual violence, such as what we witnessed last week, many are celebrating and excusing, oh, that's free expression, and that's necessary to make some twisted point. It's sick, and it's disturbing, the developments. The good news is, I want to point out here, and I get off my daughter here, and I was inspired somewhat, her sharing these messages with me, is that she used to be a school teacher, and lots of her former students. And by the way, they're of all races, political persuasions, sexual orientations, have showered her with all sorts of positive thoughts and words. And that's what, of course, keeps us all going, right? And so I'm grateful for that. And they let her know that she touched them and she helped them and helped shape and mold them into who they are, and they're productive. Many of them productive adults or perhaps in the college setting now. And, man, that's all you can do. But these teachers that are spewing the hate and celebrating the death of a human in front of children, and this video you played earlier of the mother and their children, like, here's the big news, something great happened. Was it Donald Trump that got assassinated? I can't even comprehend this. That's so upside down. That's so anti-youth. But you know, the left, they're cowards. And they believe that indoctrinating youth to such an evil, hateful line of thinking that supports their political agenda is perfectly appropriate. That's just sad, man. That really is. You're robbing them of their childhood. The time when you should only be exposed to happiness and innocence and goodness. Not evil, not hate. They're children. And then we wonder why they grow up and they're in their 20s and they're on TikTok and Twitter and everywhere else recording these videos like the lunatic you shared with us earlier. You're the one that fomented it. You inspired it. You engendered that point of thought.
Like the elected council member in Oregon or the city council president of Fairview Park, Ohio, Michael Kilbane, or the council vice president of Monroe Halls, Ohio, or the mayor of Burnsville, Pennsylvania, or the mayor of Sparta, New Jersey. All of these are elected Democrat officials that could not contain their joy that someone they disagreed with was assassinated.
Unbelievable.
When people show you they are evil, believe them. And if you are still associating yourself with that evil, you should look in the mirror.
Amanda from Pike County reminds that LB Johnson in welfare regarding that says if there was a man in the home, you couldn't get help. Of course, that's why we have one of the reasons, but there are a lot of others that have produced this fatherless home environment we have and this godless environment that we have in many circles of our country. Don't forget, Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, is up next with Will Primos. They're going to talk about how the wildlife community is being affected by last week's assassination. We're out of here today. Back with you tomorrow. Stay safe and God bless everyone.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.